Major support for The Reading Life comes from Octavia Books, an independent New Orleans bookstore. Additional support comes from the University of Louisiana at Lafayette Press. Hello and welcome to The Reading Life, WWNO's weekly look at the New Orleans literary scene. I'm Susan Larson. This week I'll be talking with Megan Burns and Bill Lavender, co-founders of the New Orleans Poetry Festival, coming up April 20th through 23rd. We'll also hear from poet Bill Jano Obradovich, who has two new books out, Incognito and Cat Painters, an anthology of contemporary Serbian poetry. Last year, Megan Burns and Bill Lavender hosted the first New Orleans Poetry Festival. Both are accomplished poets and publishers, Megan with Trembling Pillow Press and Bill with Lavender Ink and Dialogos. Now, the second New Orleans Poetry Festival is coming up April 20 through 23rd, so get ready. Bill and Megan have been working hard. Megan Burns, Bill Lavender, welcome back to The Reading Life.
Thank you for having us.
Thanks, Susan.
Now, I noticed you brought back one of the most popular events from last year, which was Poets with Bands. So this looks like a tradition in the making.
Yeah, it does. It was a whole lot of fun last year, and we use it as our sort of opening party and kind of check-in time where everybody meets and greets and has a couple of drinks and then dances until the wee hours.
And you are a poet with a band, of course.
I am, yeah.
All right. And then you're ending with another grand reading at the Maple Leaf Sunday afternoon, right?
That's correct.
So that's another tradition in the making. So tell us what's new this year, what people can look forward to.
Well, it's simply much bigger for one thing. We have about 125 poets signed up so far who will be performing. It's two full days of panels and readings as opposed to one day last year. We have two nightly feature events on Friday and Saturday, the 21st and 22nd.
And you've changed locations as well.
We did, though we love the Arts Estuary. The Healing Center is bigger, and it allowed us to have the entire thing indoors under a roof so we don't have to worry about rain. And they've been really helpful and really wanted us, and so we decided to go there.
So, Megan, talk a little bit as well about the first year. What you learned, what the reactions were, was it what you expected?
I don't know what Bill and I expected. We just threw a poetry festival. We were super surprised we did it. But yeah, I think this year it'll be easier just because we'll be in one location. What's different as well this year is that we're doing the small press fair in the lobby of the Healing Center, and that'll be open to the public. So the public can come in and see all of the small presses and editors and publishers and kind of get a little taste of the Poetry Fest, even if they aren't involved in the entire festival itself.
And roughly how many publishers do you think will be around?
About two dozen.
That's great.
Mm-hmm.
Because small press books are always so much fun to look at, as you both know. Now, one of the things I'm curious about is that you seem to have taken this great leap forward this year with international poets, poets coming from all over the place.
We have at least two poets from Uruguay, Luis Bravo and Martin Barrera Matos. Martin has a new book coming out from Dialogos, and we managed to get him up here. It's quite a long way to Montevideo. Luis was in the States anyway because he's doing a visiting thing at an American university. It's also Earth Day that Saturday.
Yes.
And so we're glad that we're able to launch this new anthology. It's called Earth, Water, and Sky. And it's a bilingual Spanish and English anthology of environmental poetry from mostly Uruguayan poets. So that's going to be fun.
And that's always been one of your goals from the very beginning, hasn't it? To grow this into this kind of international
Absolutely,
focus.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think last year one of the things that we got feedback on was people were suggesting that we try to be more inclusive. And the way we run the festival is just to open it to proposals that people submit via our website. And it's just amazing the amount of proposals we got and the diversity and the amount of people who want to kind of contribute to this festival is making it really exciting.
There's such a wide range of things that you're offering this year.
We have small presses that gathered their authors together and they'll be giving readings. And then we have various panels that have groups of poets talking about various themes and so forth. So some eco-poetics, some translations. There's such a huge variety. I'm really excited. We have a group of Asian American poets talking about being Asian American poets in the South, which I think is super exciting to present in New Orleans since we have such a large Vietnamese community. I'm really excited to see what they're going to say about that.
I know. You should have seen the people who turned out for Chinese in New Orleans at Tennessee Williams Festival. People are fascinated by that. Now, one of the things that interests me is that great wide range. I mean, you have Roger Kamenetz doing his dream workshop. You have workshops on craft, specific things. You have a translation workshop. And it seems to me like you've pitched this so that there are things for poets at every level.
There are so many things. I don't know how the poets are going to choose what to do because I can't even choose what to do. But yeah, we had to bring Roger's workshop back because the Dream and Poetry workshop was super filled to capacity last year. So that's a very popular one. But across the board, there's almost four events going on almost every hour. So finding something to do will not be a problem across many various types of poetics. We have panels on flash fiction, prose poetry. We have a panel that's completely fiction. So even if you're not a poet,
yes,
you can do
that.
Yeah, just across the board, there's so many interesting things. Horror and contemporary poetics is, you know, this great idea of how horror works in poetry. I think that's fascinating.
I do too.
There's a lot of mysticism, intuition, women's writing, just your day job, how to be a poet and make a living. There's just the practical as well.
The eternal question.
Mm-hmm.
So, Bill, what's it like for you when you're planning your portion of the festival? I mean, you're a publisher and you have the Dialogos authors reading. So how do you pick and choose among the people?
Well, first of all, I ask if they can get here. So that's one of the first ways. And then I just look at my list of recent releases. So we're doing two book launches this year, as many of the presses are doing book launches here, actually. So with, in the case of Martin Barrio Matos, Mark Statman, who is his translator and also a poet in his own right, is also going to be here. So they're going to do a little bilingual reading. You know, I try to work it out like that.
And I noticed that you're doing one workshop that kind of honors and discusses the work of two poets that we've lost recently, two New Orleans poets.
Yes, Jonathan Pinton put together a panel on Michelle Greenblatt and Daniel Reinhold, who are two, actually Michelle's was in Lafayette, but basically two local poets who passed away in the past couple of years. And that should be an interesting and poignant one.
Yeah, I thought that was really a nice touch. And you've made sure to include lots of programming for women this year, Megan.
I don't know if we made sure to include it
just
as much
happened.
As the women poets. I guess just my experience of being in the poetry community and running reading series for so long and running a press, I have a lot of connections with a lot of women poets.
Yes.
And kind of encourage them, please come to New Orleans, please come share your work, as well as a lot of publishers who will be presenting at the Small Press Book Fair, also women publishers like myself. And so, yeah, we're just kind of making some space for ourselves and saying, pay attention to what we have to say.
Exactly. Look for womb think.
Yes,
I think that's one thing to really watch for. So what are you most looking forward to, both of you? Because this is hard work to put this together. I mean, but you need to have one moment that you kind of carve out for yourself. What is it you're looking forward to seeing?
Once it starts, it's all like a blur. You know, it's like all happens so fast. But it's super exciting, the energy. You know, what I was trying to create was this kind of saturation of experience for writers to be surrounded by people who take their work completely seriously and support them and collaborate with them and inspire them to do the work after they leave the festival. And so that energy starts to build and grow and you kind of see people get excited and make connections. And as a publisher, I love to see my authors who don't know each other because they're from different parts of the country come together on a panel and they get to meet each other and they're kind of like, you're my press sibling, and they get to read together and hear each other's work. And it's really exciting to see that connection happen. And then to have it happen in my city is just, for me, very personally wonderful.
Yeah, I don't think you think of Random House as having press siblings. I mean, I think that's one of the glories of the small press community, you know what I mean? Bill, what are you looking forward to?
Well, I'm looking forward to two moments. One of them is the first night after the call girls play, and then my physical responsibility for participation is over, and I don't have to worry about that anymore. And the other moment is the open mic at the Maple Leaf, which will just be kind of a free-for-all, and there'll be hundreds of people there, and it'll be really fun and exciting, and after that, we can all go rest.
That's right, and then write, and then write, of course. But you really seem to have taken such a leap forward this year. I love that you have cubes, that we can look at those cubes and map out, you know, days worth of fun and good writing to hear. It's really an amazing lineup. And I love the small press aspect of it. I love that that's free and any book lover can just show up and take a look at all those books. We've been talking with Megan Burns and Bill Lavender, who are the co-directors of the New Orleans Poetry Festival and Small Press Book Fair, coming up April 20th through 23rd. For more information about this event, go to nolapoetry.com. Tickets are available at Eventbrite. Thanks, Megan. Thanks, Bill.
Thank you.
Thank you, Susan.
Jelena Obradovic is the chair of the English department at Xavier University. She's Serbian-American, an accomplished poet and literary translator. Today, we're talking about her two new books. One is Incognito, a new collection of her poems, and the other is the impressive and beautiful new anthology, Cat Painters, an anthology of contemporary Serbian poetry, which she edited with her colleague Dubravka Djuric. She'll be one of the poets at the New Orleans Poetry Festival coming up this weekend. Jelena, welcome to the Reading Life.
Thank you for inviting me.
At last. Now, goodness, you're busy. Academic work, your own creative work, translation. What a labor of love.
Life can be rich sometimes.
Yes, it can. So first off, tell us about the poems in Incognito, especially the title poem, which is about being mistaken for somebody else.
Well, you know, I came to this country in 1988, so it's been quite a while. I came speaking English normally. And when I came here, lots of different things happened, including a civil war in my country and my mother getting breast cancer and on and on and on. And so when I lived here from the start, it was very interesting how people could not pronounce my name, of course. And they would speak really loudly so I could hear because they thought I couldn't speak English very well. And so this poem sort of metaphorically talks about that. But it's about a time spent in Brunnenburg in northern Italy, the castle of Ezra Pound's daughter, Mary de Rakowitz. And they have exhibits there, art exhibits on and off. And it's about going to a cocktail party during the exhibit, at the opening, actually, and being mistaken for this art critic who's apparently pretty weird. So, you know, the book has a lot of different places that I've lived in, that I've been to, and that's how it's divided. It's divided into sections of places more than poems.
Of course. And they're drawn from so many parts of your life, including your life as a wife and mother, poems written to colleagues and friends, and they're just so lovely. I think they're all the things of a woman's life, you know, all the eras of a woman's life in this book. So I wonder if you'd read one for us called A Happy Child. This was a poem it made me very happy to read myself.
So this is a Sistina called A Happy Child, a Sistina for Patar. Every morning for the past year, I've had to rise before dawn, woken up by the crying beckoning of my son, Petar, calling his mother to comfort him in his sleeping. But he's also a little hungry for mommy's milk before daylight, before I have stopped dreaming, before my coffee we begin talking in our own way, and if he's not quiet, I take him downstairs to see African violets in bloom. I'm a bit wobbly walking downstairs. I look forward to this quiet time before dawn, before I begin having conversations, talking with adults. I'm happy just hugging my son, Petar, who hugs me back, gives me kisses, is my daylight. And so 5 hours a night is all I get of sleeping. I would never exchange our time alone for sleeping, never want to be upstairs in bed when downstairs we begin to play early, begin reading his farm book that lights up his face as he touches the dog's hair in the picture at dawn, or when he pats the lamb and smiles. Yes, Petter is a happy child, everyone says, and he's not even talking yet, although he says duck and ball, then his own talking, which we don't understand. But as soon as he wakes up from sleep, he starts pointing with his index finger at things, looks at Petter in the mirror in his book and says, who knows what downstairs, while I'm opening the blinds, waiting for dawn to come, for the sun to start shining with appearing daylight. And when it does come, his own face is like daylight. Oh, how he loves light coming. He starts talking as if having a conversation with his new dawn. So how can I be bothered that he's not sleeping through the night and that he makes me bring him downstairs while his father sleeps up, awake till four or so, when Petter is friendly, chatting, interested in having fun? Petter gets his way, and no one can stop the oncoming daylight, which he feels with his internal clock and wakes us to go downstairs so his papi can go on and sleep some more. Petar's not talking there to wake him up, and Daddy needs 5 hours of sleep, too, and rises at 9:30, his own dawn. At dawn, Petter behaves as if it's good to be alive, so instead of sleeping, we're up filled with joy before the first light, talking away downstairs, sharing our dreams and our love.
And Petter recently had a birthday, didn't he?
Yeah, this is an old poem, obviously.
Yeah.
He's now 14, so ready for high school next year.
And how does he like this poem?
He hasn't said anything about it, you know.
They never do.
Yeah.
But it's so lovely. I remember
those moments
with my own children, you know, Petter is happy at the light coming. I love that.
Yeah.
One of the other poems that I love so much in this book is a poem that you wrote for Maxine and Joe Casson, who have been so important in the New Orleans poetry community. And I wonder if you talk a little bit about writing about them.
Well, my husband, John Gary, knew them very well, and he was the one who introduced me to them. And instantaneously, we became really, really close friends. And I just loved Maxine. She was a really good friend of mine. And we were really sad that they passed away around the same time, within a week or so. And we went to see her in Baton Rouge when she was in the hospital dying. And we couldn't get to see Joe. But, you know, Joe was amazing also. I mean, having survived the March on Bataan and then being bitten by a mosquito and getting the West Nile virus. I thought he was going to die then, but, you know, he survived all that and made it. But, you know, Maxine was just a fabulous poet, and New Orleans should be proud of her. And I think more people should know about her work than they do.
And that's a lovely tribute you've created that hopefully will lead people to read her work.
I hope so,
I really like that so much. And now we have Cat Painters, this beautiful, big, big book of contemporary Serbian poetry. And this is a huge undertaking. I can't imagine what possessed you. Or midway through, I can imagine you thinking, what possessed me? So how did this come about? How long did it take? How'd you put it together?
Well, it started years ago by my being introduced to Charles Bernstein. Charles Bernstein asked me if I knew Dubravka Djuric, the poet and critic from Belgrade, whom he had met years before that when he went to Belgrade, and with whom he was in touch with, and I didn't know her. So I got to meet her on email. We started writing to each other, and then I got to meet her in person in Belgrade. And through the years after that, she sent me books by Serbian poets that I would review in World Literature Today for years and years. And each summer, she would have a stack of books waiting for me to take back to the States and so on. Well, after a while, I thought, well, why don't we do something with this, you know? And I decided to base my sabbatical at Xavier on putting this anthology together. Now, Charles Simic, you know, the famous Serbian-American poet laureate, had an anthology before this one, but it was not done the way ours was. Ours has 50 years of Serbian poetry. it starts around World War II, poets born around World War II, and goes on to poets born in 1980s. So it's 50 years of poetry, of poets writing from the 60s onwards to the present. We've also tried to do things that have never been done before as far as Serbian poetry is concerned. 50% of the book is by women. This is very unusual for anthologies of Serbian poetry. We have also included a large number of minorities, some of displaced people, people who were displaced by the war, some who call themselves Serbs but are from Bosnia or from Montenegro or from Croatia and so on, some who are diasporic poets, like I am, and they're poets in Paris, in other parts of the world. There's another poet in Florence, as well as poets who call themselves Serbs but do not necessarily write in Serbian. These are minorities, poets who write in Hungarian and Romanian, other languages. And we have included, I think for the first time, a Roma poet who ends the book finally. So it's very different. It took us 4.5 years to put this together.
Wow.
It's a long, long time. We worked and worked hard. I've translated more than 70% of this book myself, but there are other translators, including Charles Simic, and they're scattered all over the world as well. And then Charles Bernstein was gracious enough to write the preface to this book.
Well, it's so much. I mean, it's so rich. There's 71 poets, 31 translators. I mean, didn't you feel, or did you feel part of something bigger than yourself when you were doing it? I think translating is such an act of stewardship of another person's work. You know what I mean?
Yes, yes. Well, I thought it was important, and this was the moment, and I had the energy to do this. I'm grateful to my colleague in Serbia, Dubrovka, who, you know, we both are university professors, and we have very little time for anything. We have families, obviously. But we thought this was very important to show a different side of Serbia than we have seen in the past 20 years through the wars. And I think this might change the idea of who Serbs are when they read this book.
And tell us why you called it Cap Painters.
Well, it's called after the painting that's on the cover. The painting on the cover is Cat Painter, and it was painted by Mileta Prodanović, who's a fiction writer but a professor of art at the University of Arts in Belgrade. And this painting was painted after another painting, a self-portrait by Milena Pavlović Barili, who was an Italian-Serbian painter, very famous, who had lived in New York. She had lived in Paris. She knew people like Jean Cocteau and André Breton. She was the woman that the movie Cat People was made after, supposedly. And what I mean is the 1942 version, not the one with David Bowie. Okay. So she was a painter who supported herself by drawing for leading fashion journals like Vogue, Harper's Bazaar, Town and Country. So it's really interesting that Prodanović has created this absolutely stunning painting that everybody loves when they see the cover after her painting, which I grew up with. This painting is on our stamps, you know.
Oh.
It's very, very famous. So I got to see her grave. She's buried in the Protestant cemetery in Rome. And it's, you know, I never knew her, obviously. She died pretty young. And just love this painting. So I decided to call it Cat Painters, in a way, talking about this transformation of the poets into how we can sometimes be brutal and cruel, but we can also be beautiful, beautiful people.
Oh, that's lovely. We've been talking with Biljana Obradović, whose new books are Incognito, Poems, and Cat Painters, an anthology of contemporary Serbian poetry. You can meet her at the New Orleans Poetry Festival coming up April 21st through 23rd. For more information, check out nolapoetry.org. Biljana, thank you so much.
Thank you, Susan.
Here's what's on tap in the literary life this week. Mary Lou Kristovich discusses Insan's Garden Legacy with her co-author Rulak Toledano, Tuesday, April 18th at 6 at Garden District Bookshop.
Tom McDermott reads from and signs Five Lines, No Waiting, Tuesday, April 18th at 6 at Octavia Books. Joshua Jolly Shapiro discusses Island People, the Caribbean, and the World, Tuesday, April 18th at 6 at the Stone Auditorium, the Woldenberg Arts Center, Tulane University, with an after party at Three Keys in the Ace Hotel starting at 8. Room 220 presents Tom Lowenstein discussing and signing The Trials of Walter Ogrod, as well as poet Spree McDonald, whose first chapbook is Milksop Codicil, Tuesday, April 18th at 7 at the Antenna Gallery, 3718 St. Claude Avenue. Every Child Ready to Read presents a workshop, Fun with Letters, Wednesday, April 19th at 5:30 at the Central City Library. Christina von Nolken presents the 28th Ferguson Lecture, Two Professors, Busting the German Code, and a Landmark Edition of Chaucer's Canterbury Tales, Thursday, April 20th at 6 in the Freeman Auditorium of the Woldenberg Arts Center at Tulane. A reception in the Newcomb Hall Faculty Lounge begins at 5. Today's guests, Megan Burns and Bill Lavender, will be hosting the second annual New Orleans Poetry Festival, April 20th through 23rd at the New Orleans Healing Center and other venues. The complete schedule is up at nolapoetry.com. Poetry for everyone. The fest concludes with a grand reading at the Maple Leaf Bar Sunday, April 23rd at 3. Big Class's Pizza Poetry Project and the New Orleans Youth Open Mic are coming together to launch the New Orleans Youth Poetry Festival. The fourth annual Pizza Poetry Project takes place Friday, April 21st, when you can order a pizza from Reginelli's, Theo's, Pizza Delicious, Mid-City Pizza, Garage Pizza, and G's Pizza, and a portion of the proceeds benefit Big Class. But best of all, you'll get a poem delivered on your pizza box. The New Orleans Youth Poetry Festival gets underway Wednesday, April 19th from 6 to 8 with a youth open mic featuring Sonny Patterson and Paige's Madam at The Rat in the Lavin Burnick Center at Tulane. It continues April 21st from 6 to 10 with a youth slam from 6 to 8 and a mixer from 8 to 10 at the Ashe Cultural Arts Center, 1712 Aretha Castle Haley. And then Saturday, April 22nd from 10 to 4 with workshops and a celebration day at the Main Library, 219 Loyola Avenue. For more information, visit nouyouthpoetryfestival.org. Jen Sincero signs You Are a Badass at Making Money, Mastering the Mindset of Wealth, Sunday, April 23rd from 2 to 4 at Garden District Bookshop. Joan Nathan appears with Chef Alon Shaya to discuss her book King Solomon's Table, a culinary exploration of Jewish cooking from around the world, Tuesday, April 25th at 7 at the New Orleans Jewish Community Center. And coming up, Garden District Bookshop presents Facebook COO and Lean In author Sheryl Sandberg, author of the new book Option B, Facing Adversity, Building Resilience, and Finding Joy, in conversation with Mary Madeline, Tuesday, May 9th at 7 at the NIMS Fine Arts Center of the Academy of the Sacred Heart, 4401 St. Charles Avenue. Go to GardenDistrictBookshop.com for tickets. Major support for The Reading Life comes from Octavia Books. Additional support comes from the Christwood Retirement Community, Our Lady of Holy Cross College, and the University of Louisiana at Lafayette Press. The theme song and end music for The Reading Life is by Matt Perrine and Sunflower City. The Reading Life is produced by Jenny Lawson and is a production of WWNO. You can listen to us anytime or subscribe to our podcast at wwno.org. Or you can email us anytime at thereadinglife@wwno.org. I'm Susan Larson. Thanks for listening and keep reading. ¶¶